Take it away, Vincent.
All right, thank you. I really don't have a lot to say that hasn't already been said. I think I could summarize my talk in four words, produce synthetic data, yo. And I think that many of you are doing this already, and it's very encouraging. Again, I don't think I really need to tell you why you need to produce synthetic data, but just to run through a few of the examples here, I think it's important both for theorists and for the observers. For the theorists, you produce these wonderful models, and if we had infinite resolution imaging, if we didn't have to worry about scattering, we could just make wonderful movies and see whether your movies line up. But nature is cruel to us, and we don't have infinite funding, and the Earth is a finite size, et cetera, et cetera. So there needs to be sort of an impedance match between the movies that that the theorists create and the observables that we can observe. And so, if you're making predictions, it helps to put those in a language that we can compare easily with our data. That goes to finding features in your data as well, in your model as well. So, for instance, if you're predicting a photon ring that is distinctly non-circular, the question will be, to what degree can we detect that non-circularity, especially as it's got an accretion flow around it or an outflow that lights up, and we don't see just the ring, we see the composite of all of the brightness in the image domain. For the observers and the stakeholders especially, I think it's important to know what's capable and what could be capable in the future as we upgrade the array. It would be nice to drop a telescope in the Hamsburg, but the question is, how will that improve the images we produce? How will that improve the observables that we can get? And will that be worth the money? And I think for the little bit of money that it would take, in the grand scheme of things, I think we'll find that it does, but there are certainly places you could put a telescope that would be less helpful than other places. And of course, it's important to develop techniques to see when we have data, what's the best we can do with them. We have been adopting some of the optical interferometry imaging techniques that show that we can do a much better job than clean. I think everyone kind of knew that ahead of time. But I think there's a lot to be done yet in image reconstruction and interpreting the data in general. So synthetic data are helpful there as well. All right, so I'm prattling on a bit about why we should do this. What do? Well, it's very easy. You take your image, you produce a Fourier transform, you read off the visibilities, and then if you want to construct other VLBI observables, like closure phases, you just do it. Add noise. So what's so hard about this? Well, really, it's just bookkeeping. But there are a lot of places where a little smudge in your ledger can lead you wrong. Signs, of course, are always a problem. The sky is left-handed. UV coordinates are best expressed in a left-handed coordinate system. You don't have to do this. You can write your code in a way that does everything in a right-handed manner. But when you start throwing in convolutions, for instance, with a Gaussian that's at a position angle of 80 degrees, now you have multiple opportunities for a sign error to lead you to an incorrect result along the way. How you define phase, which direction is positive phase, that can bite you. Anytime you have Fourier transform, Fourier transforms are factors of 2 pi depending on how you define them. Polarization is especially insidious because even within the radio astronomy community, there is not one standard definition of the Stokes quantities. And if you are trying to compare, for instance, what you think your instrumental polarization terms are with what Myriad thinks your instrumental polarization terms are, there may be a rotation in there that you weren't expecting. And of course, anytime you're trying to get everything right and you have all of these effects, you could have a bug. And so I think even if you're going to be doing simulation yourself, it's always helpful to validate your simulation against a pathway that we know works. So I will tell you about one of these, the MIT Array Performance Simulator. So this was written many years ago now in the days of LOFAR, when the MWA team were still part of the LOFAR team. And was designed originally for modeling LOFAR, so for a connected element array that's in one specific place and that would have to model effects that are of special interest to the low-frequency community. Wide field imaging, ionospheric response. Not all of these modules are useful at 230 gigahertz for a planet-scale array. But the code is usable as well for EHT modeling. The source code is available for free download from the Haystack website. And MAPS is designed to be relatively easy to use. So you start with an input FITS image. This is one of Avery's models of M87. And then you have to give it the same information that that you would have to give anything that that would simulate these data. So you have to give it a list of telescopes along with their coordinates, x, y, z in the Cartesian coordinates. You can also give it elevation limits. So if you want to throw out all data below 15 degrees elevation because atmospherics really bite you, you can do that. And then there's this quantity called the SEFD, or system equivalent flux density, which is a measure of the noise of each telescope. The lower the number, the better. We also have to give it a little bit of information about what it is that we're, how we're setting up the observations. So there's an observation specification file in which you tell it the RA and the deck that you're looking at, the field of view of your image. You tell it what frequency you're observing, the bandwidth, how long each scan is, when each scan starts. So again, this is information that you would have to give any simulation program, and this is very easy to translate between what a real observation would do and what you're trying to simulate here. A real observation, for instance, won't be able to sit on the source constantly for 4 hours because you're going to want to go off and you're going to want to point the telescopes, acquire calibration data, etc. And MAPS produces output in a couple of different formats. One is that you can actually create a UV FITS file and load that into your favorite package, like APES or CASA, and reconstruct an image. But it also has text output, and it gives you really all the information that you need to use these and construct quantities that you would want. So for some reason, this doesn't show up on the screen. Time, UV coordinates, visibility, amplitude, and phase, and an error bar on each of your visibilities. So once you have your simulated data, you can do lots of things with it. We've heard in several talks about image reconstructions. Many of the techniques from the optical interferometry community use what's known as the OI-FITS format. And if you go on the EHT wiki, there is a tool there, a C program that we've written, that will take the visibility data and some of the MAPS input files and reassemble everything into an OI-FITS file that BSMEM or Squeeze or MACM or some of these packages expect. Or again, you can take the UV FITS data and run clean on it. But you can also construct VLBI observable quantities. So visibility amplitude is the obvious one. You just read it off of the text list. Amplitudes, of course, aren't robust against calibration errors, but several quantities are. We've already talked about closure phases at length in this meeting, where if you produce the sum of the visibility phases along a closed triangle, the atmospheric, the tropospheric phases drop out. There's also closure amplitudes. What you measure is related to the visibility of the source visibility multiplied by gain errors. And if you construct a ratio of amplitudes among four stations, you'll get these G factors, GA, GB, GC, GD, exactly once in the numerator and the denominator, and they cancel out. Closure amplitudes, therefore, are robust against amplitude miscalibration, although they do have biases in the low signal noise ratio regime, since amplitude is itself a biased quantity. Polarimetric ratios kind of give you the best of both worlds, in that if you take a right-left correlation and a left-left correlation, and you take the ratio, you get a residual gain factor that's the right versus left gain at one of the telescopes. The right versus left gain tends to be very stable, fairly stable with time. You can have beam squint errors, but it's usually much better than the error in either the right or the left quantity independently. And the atmosphere is not birefringent, so when you compute the phase errors in each of the two polarimetric quantities, you get the exact same phase error in right circular as you do in left circular. So when you take the phase difference, which is the argument of the ratio, those drop out. Michael Johnson pointed out in his talk, closure phases and polarimetric ratios also don't care about the scattering properties. You will lose signal-to-noise ratio, but the quantities themselves, the observables, are robust against the scattering. We have a page on the wiki. Shep will talk about the wiki in a moment. There is a simulation and imaging tools webpage that has a link to a demo that Rusen Liu produced. So there's that image from Avery, as well as all the setup files you would need to run maps and produce an image reconstruction. There are other tools here. There are links to imaging packages. I would hope that this will become a repository for our collective wisdom of how to simulate data and how to image data. For those of you who have tools to contribute, I would very strongly encourage that. Our colleagues over at MIT CSAIL, led by Katie Bauman, who's here, also have created a web page to do image reconstruction sort of automatically, where you upload an image of what you think Sagittarius Star looks like. If you think it's a city in the center of the galaxy, that's an example. You specify a telescope array, et cetera, and it will, behind the scenes, run all the code for you. So in summary, synthetic data are useful. Again, please produce synthetic data. Use the EHT wiki. There are examples, links to software that's useful. Even if you think you know how to do it right, and many of you are doing it correctly, it never hurts to cross-check against another simulation pathway. If you're really confident about yours, maybe you'll find a bug in maps, and we'd like to know about that. Please share your tools, your scripts, your software, your received wisdom. Let's all do this as a community. All right, thank you.
We have plenty of time for questions.
Go ahead, Jeff. Vincent, two things. One, I think it's very important to include realistic calibration errors in the data. Does MAPS do that?
MAPS doesn't currently do that, but the text output lends itself incredibly well to that. For instance, it's very easy to take this file, just read off the antenna numbers here on the baseline and your visibilities, and produce Gaussian random calibration errors on each telescope and do that. As you point out, the images you get are not as good as you would hope.
So the second related comment to that is I really think that going back to John Monnier's suggestion on Monday that we need to develop a blind imaging challenge as part of the project, and where the data starts at the correlator output and a set of calibration data, because that's the pipeline that it all goes through, and we need to know, you know, when you put in a crescent or a ring or a jet, do you actually, you know, can anyone actually find that reliably in that data?
Yes, we've talked with John Monnier and Fabien Baron from the OI community, and we've also talked with several people from the computer vision community, and we think there's a general consensus that it would be nice to have an interferometric beauty contest, imaging beauty contest, in the same way that the OI community has every couple of years for EHT data. And we're hoping that we can interest the community in putting an EHT simulation in the next time around.
Avery,
then. So in response very quickly to this blind beauty challenge, another thing that we need to be doing is taking different models and cross-comparing. So, for example, if we take one of these very dynamical accretion flow simulations, make images, can the kind of very simplistic smooth models that I play with back out parameters, not just detect, but parameter estimation? That's the next step. Regarding data, you mentioned something very important that's tripped us all up many times. It's astronomers do everything backwards unless you expect them to, then they do it forwards. Hey, we got to choose directions to compute the closure phases and all of that. It would be fantastic if we just came up with a definition. We put it somewhere, and we said, this is what you need to, you know, you have your own favorite way of computing these things if you don't want to use maps. This is the definition we must all conform to. And along that lines, we should be cataloging data that, you know, we use repeatedly. Like, we should have a collaboration mass for Sag-A-Star, and that's the standard mass we're going to use, and then Andrea and Stefan come and update the mass for us, And we update it, but intermittently, so that we're always comparing apples to apples and stuff like that.
Absolutely. And on the sign of the phase, for instance, on the wiki, there is a comparison of output from the Mark IV and DiffX correlators. There's comparison against the conventions used in apes and maps. You have to kind of go digging around for it. I think it's not of interest to most people. But if you want to make sure that you're getting the sign of your phase right, that's available.
Hi. So regarding the robustness of the use of closures and fractional polarizations, I would like to raise maybe a word of caution on the effect of leakage, polarization leakage. Because leakage can be so nasty that can make your closures even don't close as you expect, because the brightness distributions that they would represent would be a funny combination of Stokes parameters, which in turn would evolve in time as the parallactic angle changes. And that can be a mess if it's not treated correctly. So,
yes, absolutely. Closure phases are robust against station-based errors, but polarization leakage varies on baselines. Same is true of mismatched band passes, for instance.
So that's the point. So all these assumes that the polarization calibration will be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you.
Dan, and then Thomas.
So is this thing on? Vincent, obviously, I think most of us think we need a very well-vetted way to generate fake data like this for the project. Do you expect that the path forward from here is that we are adding to maps all the bells and whistles that we think we need? And, you know, are you in any way set up to do that? Is there version control? How do you see this going forward?
I think that's an excellent idea. Maps is designed in a modular way so that if you wanted to add, for instance, a tropospheric phase screen, you could do that. We'd have to think a little bit about how to modify it if you wanted there are several people here who are more familiar with the innards of maps than I am, since they wrote them. I see one of them is nodding in my direction. Would it be difficult to throw in polarization miscalibration into maps, for instance, Colin?
Not in principle. There's nothing architecturally difficult preventing that. I mean, it's obviously going to be a significant amount of work, though.
Sorry. Did anybody hear me, or was it just mumbling?
One more time, please.
Okay. There's nothing fundamental about the architecture of maps that would prevent you from putting in these capabilities. I don't think it would be any more difficult than in any other package. And since maps has undergone quite a bit of development for EHT use already, it would make sense to leverage that.
Just in addition to this, I'd like to point out that there are at least two, if not three, different simulators which do exactly the same, which take also into account time variable station gains. And in particular, the DTSim in Apes has already implemented the full polarization capabilities. That means we use that in order to analyze the crosstalk between the linear and circular feeds on the APEX to SMA observations in 2012. And Alan Roy has done a great job in trying to understand what happens with the crosstalks. And another word of caution is it looks like we are reinventing sometimes software which exists already since decades. I mean, we all know Tim Pearson has written the Caltech package, which is still available. It probably needs some updates, but it also has a very good simulator in it. So it would be actually worthwhile to check the results just to be sure that there are no bugs somewhere, particularly if theoreticians just like to take data and believe it, right? Unfortunately, the real life is a little bit more complicated.
So if I could just add one final comment on this, I think there's different simulation packages out there for sure, and they all have different strengths and weaknesses. There's actually a fair amount of complexity in the way that you can attack the simulation. The capabilities that that Thomas just mentioned are important, but so are some of the features of maps in the way that the visibilities are calculated in a slightly more fine-grained way than other simulators, and that's useful as well if you want to understand bandwidth smearing and time average smearing in a rigorous way, for example. So I think the thing to do is look and take the best of each of these simulators.
Yeah, and just one more thing. I think this is worth discussing, and it'll be a big discussion going forward, but it's so essential that we have a very well-vetted package. It can be more than one, and it's good that, you know, Apes and DiffMap still exist because we can use those to cross-check, but we also have to have a package that is modern enough. By that I probably mean not written in Fortran, so that it can be actively developed by people under 100.
Yeah, and the
so yeah, are you saying you cannot program in Fortran anymore?
Yes, having a simulated data working group and an approved set of packages, a vetted pathway that's very easy for an outside user to use, I think would be a very good idea.
Okay, I just want to point out that one can determine the polarization leakage terms and remove them from the parallel hands and therefore from the closure phases. But there are other things that can affect the closure phases too, such as non-identical band passes at the different antennas.
Yes, and that argues for homogeneity of backends, I think.